from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to Don Bailey Jr. Next week, Dan Radakovich will join us on the show. Right now, time to go Behind the U, the Behind the U podcast, with the third member of our broadcast team, Josh Darrow.
Another edition of the Behind the U podcast, and we are pleased to be joined by the new women's basketball coach at the University of Miami, Tricia Cullip. Coach, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
You look good with the green and orange in the background there.
Thank you. It's a pretty cool setup in this office.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been a whirlwind, yes?
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind, but it's also been awesome. I've really enjoyed my time and getting to know all the people on campus, getting to know the team, and also talking to recruits about what we have to offer.
You replaced someone who built a program and Coach Meyer and did great things, but you did the same thing at Toledo and Evansville, really. So I imagine you have a great appreciation for what you're inheriting.
No doubt. Anytime someone's been somewhere 19 years, I mean, she did a phenomenal job. Coach Meyer, I have so much admiration for not only her as a person, but her as a coach and how she built this program. What a wonderful legacy she has here. And, you know, I told her the biggest compliment we can give her is to continue to build it, continue to uphold all the things that, you know, she stood for and built, because it's an incredible program, incredible university. And we want to continue to put a really strong product on the floor.
Growing up in Indiana, how big was basketball in your life as a child? And how big is basketball? I know basketball is big, but maybe you could describe how big it is in that state.
I think I read a stat one time that 14 out of the top 16 seat high school gyms in the nation are in Indiana. And that doesn't surprise me. Growing up, you know, the crowds for high school games are enormous. I feel like every child that's born gets a basketball put in their hand.
Was that you?
Yeah. My dad and mom played. And so, you know, everybody has a hoop outside in their yard. So growing up, you know, it's, you watch it a lot, you play it a lot, you're going to camps a lot. And, you know, I'm grateful I had a chance to grow up there. It was an incredible place if you love this sport. And I do.
Now, is it like the, you know, I think those Larry Bird videos with like the chain net out in the, you know, yeah. Just kind of, is that what it's like?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I lived really far out in the country, but I had a moped and I would drive it 20 minutes into another town to play pickup basketball games on a chain link goal, a concrete court. And so, you know, you tried to find games anywhere you could find them. But yeah. And obviously when I watched the movie Hoosiers, I played in some of those gyms. So it's kind of incredible. But yeah, Larry Bird, French Lick is about an hour south of where I grew up. I grew up an enormous Larry Bird fan, thus the number 33 that I wore in college.
Did you wear?
I did.
Okay.
I loved Larry Bird. Still do.
What's not to like, right?
Phenomenal shooter and passer. My goodness.
So now for you to go to Purdue, a big deal to stay home or stay in state?
Yeah. My older sister went to IU. I actually considered going to Indiana, but my middle sister went to Purdue. And the more, as I played club basketball, a lot of my club teammates went to Purdue. And so I just had a natural bond with them. Ironically, Lynn Dunn, who is the former Miami coach, was the coach at Purdue when I was being recruited. And I do remember, I want to say my freshman or sophomore year, we came down here to play. I lost by two. I remember it was a small gym. The entire football team was around the court. So it was very tight and intimidating. And we lost by two. But that was a vivid memory. Fern Labadie was the coach. But that's probably the last time I was on campus. So it was awesome for me to see what it looks like now when I came on my interview.
Full circle moment with Coach Donruss.
Yeah, I had the chance to see her at the Final Four. And one of my assistants, Jesse Ivey, was speaking at the Final Four on a round table. And right after her was Coach Dunn. And so Coach Dunn walked in the room and we hugged and talked a little bit briefly about Miami. But I tell you what's also been neat is that in the last 2 weeks, I've seen Coach Dunn, Fern, and Katie. So to know that all three of them are around and can give me advice and point me in the right direction is awesome.
So you talked just before about how, you know, quality over quantity, practice, how you kind of shape that. I heard you say something that I thought was really interesting, and I'll kind of string a couple points together, which is one, I guess now post-game, you limit your time with your team, so to speak, in terms of talking to them. But the other thing I thought that was really, really interesting, Coach, was that you'll watch the game, and then you'll actually go back and look at your practice notes to see any correlation between if something, I guess, right or wrong, right? But before you maybe talk to your players about what they can do better. To me, it seems like a self-check and a self-accountability. And so where did that come from? I actually think it's extremely astute. When I heard that, I was like, that's pretty good.
Well, first of all, you know, we don't go in the locker room after games. That's part of building your attendance. It's also part of, I talked to a sports psychologist once that told me the worst time you can learn something is when you're tired. And you're really exhausted after a game. You've just ran probably 5 miles and you're mentally and physically exhausted. The last thing you need to do is hear me come in and have a 30-minute spiel about how I feel about something. What I do is I grab my team at half court and I'll say something like, hey, we got to rebound better. We'll talk about it tomorrow. But then the next thing you'll hear me say is, anybody that has to go to media, go now. If not, I need you to go say thank you to all these fans and start to get to know them. Our fans at Toledo love that. I do think it helped us build our attendance. I don't think people come to games because of billboards. Boards or advertisements. They come because they know someone. It's a relationship thing. So the more our players, and I do think the players are the best sell. If the players can go out and high five a youngster who's in the stands that maybe looks up to them, or maybe talk to a fan that's been a season ticket holder for a long time, they may bring some more people next game to say, hey, did you meet Susie? She's awesome. I want you to meet her. Come stay after the game. That's a relationship thing. That's a program builder. But I also think after I get done with media, it's a great time for me to grab my film and start in on it an hour earlier so that I can break it down for the team the next day. I always show them good and bad because I want them to keep it in perspective. But we show good and bad of offense, good and bad of defense. We time it. It's 7 minutes of each. Within 15 minutes, we're walking out into practice. It's just enough that they see it, they know it. And I'll be honest, if I stop the film and they say, oh yeah, I missed a box out there, then I'm happier than if I have to say it. I want our film sessions to be very interactive because then I know they know it. If I'm just barking out the instructions, then who knows if they're even paying attention. So I want them very involved in the film sessions. And then you had asked me a second part of that. I want to make sure I answer it. What was the second part?
The part was when you go back and watch the film, I'm imagining from a corrective standpoint, you actually will go back and watch or review your practice notes to see if something went wrong in the game. I'm assuming, did we not pay enough attention to it during practice? Do I have that right?
You do. I was talking to my college coach when I was at Evansville, and I was just telling her, you know, gosh, I feel like, you know, we're really struggling with these 2 points, you know, and maybe it was our free throw percentage and, you know, maybe our 3-point percentage. And she said, well, Tricia, go back and look at your practice and see how much you worked on it. And I looked at my practice plan and I was mad at myself. You know, you can tell your players to get in the gym, but really, what are you structuring your practices around? The other thing is, are your practices too long that kids don't have time to shoot between classes and everything else? So I tried to structure my practices where the things that are going to be most important to winning a game, we do every day. And then our practices are short enough where the kids have plenty of time to do individual workouts with their personal skill development with my staff and film with them, in addition to the team film that we're doing, which means we've got to be really organized. But after every game, especially a loss, but even after wins, I go back and kind of grade myself because, you know, I don't think it's good to just point the finger at the team. I mean, we all had a hand in anything that we do. And so it's really important that sometimes I'll say to them, you know, hey, this team team threw a 1-3-1 at us. They hadn't played it all year, but it's my fault. We should have spent some time just in case throughout this week. We probably know we're going to get some curveballs thrown at us. So guys, I'll take that one. Now let's talk about a couple things I need you to take. I think a team will digest that better than me just saying, you did a bad job against the 1-3-1. Boy, you got to shoot better from the free throw percentage. Like, I can't believe you guys haven't been in the gym. I think if we come up with a plan together and they take accountability and I take accountability, there's a more of a buy-in. Our men's coach at Toledo, Todd Kowalczyk, I learned a lot from him. He would pay people to come in and watch practice and give him feedback on, was he doing a good job with the talent he had? And so I started doing that. I had WNBA coaches come in the offseason and I would pay them to watch practice, give us some feedback, talk to the team a little bit. And I learned a lot. And then he also would do a postseason evaluation of his program. And I learned a lot about that too. So I started doing the same thing. I just thought he really had some great ideas about self-reflection that can help save you a lot of time from making the same mistakes again.
From hearing you speak a few different times, even at the introductory press conference, Coach, that the relationship and community building of generating a fan base and having support is very top of mind to you, exactly how you want to do it. And you touched on it briefly before about relationship building. My particular job now is in sales, and there's a line that people buy from people they trust, right? And I feel like inside of how you think of this, that there's a connection that you can make person to person, athlete, coach, to fan base, is of the utmost importance to you, because that becomes real and that drives support.
Well, in your arena, it provides a family atmosphere. You know, a lot of our players, they're not born here. And so to have people in the stands that are their surrogate family is awesome. But also to have an environment that other teams don't enjoy being in, that maybe referees feel like they've got to be on their best behavior in. All those things are awesome about having a great environment. And on top of it, it's just fun, right? It's fun to work in, and even for a player to play in a great environment. So when I was at Evansville, we started out with about 200 fans a game. By the time I left there, we had about 1,500. Keep in mind, about 2,400 students enrolled there. So 1,500 was pretty good. Got to Toledo and we started with 1,500 after the program had been through five losing seasons. That program has led the MAC in attendance for like 34 years in a row. It's crazy. The coaches even before me did a tremendous job. But we started with 1,500 and when we left this year, I think we were up to about 4,500.
So what'd you do? How'd that happen?
Well, number one, winning the NIT helped. In 2011, you know, we were able to beat Delaware, Alabama, Auburn, Syracuse, and USC to win the WNIT, and every round got bigger. And by the time we won it, we had a lot of people hooked on our game that we kept from then on. The other thing is, I really never said no to a lot of speaking engagements, not because I was getting paid anything, but because I was meeting people and I could tell them about our game. I could take video with me. Like I said, I think having relationships, getting to know people in the community. I took our players out a lot to do things like Race for the Cure. We worked a water station out to elementary schools to read books. We would do Halloween events. And that was awesome too, because the kids could be out interacting, giving posters, signing autographs, those kind of things. So, you know, a lot of good interaction. And that's what I'm going to be looking for here. Opportunities for our players to get out, meet people, interact with young kids and all ages, but also hopefully get them hooked on wanting to come to our games.
All right. Last thing on the way out. And apparently you are a little bit of a prankster.
Yeah.
We got anything up our sleeves here early on? Have we done anything yet?
I haven't done anything yet. You know, around Halloween, I used to dress up and hide around the arena and scare kids. They caught on to it and started trying to scare me.
How'd you take that? How are you as the recipient of the prank?
Oh, I was fine. I laughed hard, because when you have people that love to have a good time, I think that speaks to how much they care about each other. And so I think it's fun to play pranks on each other and enjoy the moments. We have a lot of tense moments together in games. So I think it's really good when off the court, you can enjoy each other, laugh a lot. I mean, if you're not laughing in this job, it's just you're not having the fulfillment you should have, because there's a lot of humorous moments that happen, whether it be, you know, someone tripping and falling, not getting hurt, but tripping and falling at an inopportune time. You can't help but in the film session the next day have that on.
That's part of it. We're going to poke some fun.
Definitely got to have a lot of fun with that. But I do enjoy having moments with the players that we can all laugh about. And even if it's self-deprecating, I'm all about that as well.
Coach Cullip, thank you.
All right. Thanks.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.